From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Melissa Block. A British writer and a buff of history, science, and such stuff has jotted down in jaunty rhyme a history of Britain from the time of Caesar up until the day in 1966 when they took home the World Cup. The writer is James Muirden, and the task is his to synthesize in pithy verse how Britain went from bad to worse through Celts and Romans, Saxons, Danes, and then grew mighty through the strains of Plantagenet, Lancaster, York, and Tudor. It's all in there, Isabella's suitor, Thomas Becket slain in church, Richard II left in the lurch, how Black Death rampaged through the land, a new Bible at King James's hand. James Muirden tells us what he's done. He starts his reading on page one.
To start this rhyming history, I've chosen 55 BC. The Romans, who had got their hands on all the European lands, could see this last annoying bit and thought they ought to conquer it. Their famous Caesar, Julius, did not know what to make of us. He couldn't work out who was who, since everyone was painted blue. He took some souvenirs away, went home, and said, "Et tu, Brute?"
Well, that covers about the first 10 years or so, I guess, and sets us on the course of rampage and pillage, Romans and Celts and Saxons and Danes, and it all gets to be quite a big mess. It must have been a bit tricky to sort through all of this in verse, I would think.
Well, writing in verse does have the advantage that it makes you think very clearly, because when every word counts and every line counts, you really have to be quite ruthless about what you put in and what you leave out. And so I got a standard history of Britain. Now, you must remember that when I started writing this book, I didn't know any history. Now, I wrote the book in order to learn history. And I got a standard history of Britain and simply divided it up into 300 sections, if you like, and saw which parts of history fitted each section and started to write the book.
And you have any number of names to wrestle with here. I'm fond of Athelstan. This would be the first king, I guess, of England.
Yeah.
Not Athelstan, a name that I'm familiar with.
No, well, you wouldn't be. And I think very few people over here are. I certainly had never heard of Athelstan until I realized, as you say, he was the first king of a united England.
And that's the year he takes power in the year 927. Succeeded eventually by my favorite, I think, king, Ethelred the Unready.
Right, yes, Ethelred the Unready has had a bad press. Because I don't think he was quite as unready as people say, but nevertheless, you like to put labels on people, don't you? And that fact that he is supposed to have been unready has ensured his fame.
Well, let's give Ethelred his due. Can you read us part of the section about Ethelred the Unready, who ruled, let's see, from 978 to 1016?
He's earned a dismal reputation. Corruption and procrastination blotted his reign. He even paid the Danes vast sums not to invade. His first wife died. She'd had enough. But he knew of a bit of stuff, Emma of Normandy, still single, though sweet and 20, and bilingual. Her brother was a duke, which meant a pretty hefty settlement. So she was fetched to share the bed of rough, unready Ethelred.
There are points here where you have a great deal of fun with rhyme. I like this rhyme in particular. You're talking about a nephew of Henry II named Stephen. Nephew Stephen, Count of Blois. Tricky to rhyme, but there you are.
Yes.
Just come right out with it.
Yeah. Well, some of these rhymes are literally what came into my head as I was rhyming. And the trouble with writing poetry is that there's almost always a better way of writing any poem. You can never get it right. But some rhymes like that, the Blois and the R, I was quite happy with at the time, and I've remained happy with ever since. I've never felt a need to revise that one.
No need to change.
No.
let's jump ahead in time to the House of Lancaster and Henry IV, King Henry IV. If we know much about them, maybe we know it through Shakespeare, but he has a young son who will become Henry V, and Henry V is getting a lot of publicity throughout England for his exploits, and the father is not terribly happy by this. I wonder if you could read this section. This is the part of top of page 72.
Yes, well, Prince Hal was a gossip columnist's dream in those days, because always getting up to mischief. King Henry saw this in Ye Sun, the paper read by everyone. He groaned to Hal, "Didn't I stress the power of the tabloid press? This says the common folk would rather have you for king, and I'm your father." "Don't worry, Pop," young Henry said. I'll have a ball till you are dead, but once they've given me the crown, I guarantee I'll settle down. To read the verbal transcript, see Henry IV, Part 1, Act 3.
It's a little plug for Shakespeare there.
Yeah, well, oddly enough, I'm quite familiar with this Shakespeare because at the moment I'm writing a further rhyming book which is in fact about Shakespeare's plays. And I'm deep in the Henrys at the moment. I'm writing a Henry VI at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, Henry V was a very uninteresting fellow. He was so successful that, in fact, he wasn't very interesting.
And you write about how Henry V died. Is this true? The rhyme that you choose, I'll let you read this. This is the top of page 76, describing Henry V's demise.
Yes, Henry married the French princess. This is the verse about that brief marriage, really. She held him for 2 years, no more. This Henry was a meteor pulled down from the celestial sphere by agonizing diarrhea.
Now, is that true?
Yeah, it certainly is true. Perhaps in a way, like our poet Keats, it's not a bad thing to die in your prime.
But not a kind way to go, it sounds like.
A very unkind way to go, yes.
And you end in 1966. Why don't you read from the very last verse of your book?
Right. I ended in 1966 because 1966 was personally an important year for me. I lived in London all my life until that year, and I left London. And also because at that age, the winning of the Football World Cup in 1996 was a monumental event which nobody who's lived through it would actually forget. Okay. But now I've reached remembered time, I'll end my convoluted rhyme with Bobby Moore lifting up the 1966 World Cup when England took their final bow. They think it's over. It is now. That last line, which may puzzle you, they think it's over, it is now, was the words used by the commentator when the final whistle went in a very tense end of the match. They think it's over, it is now, is now become part of the national conscience, if you like. That's why I ended the story with that line.
And how handy that they put it in iambic tetrameter for you, so you could stick it right in there.
Yes.
Well, James Mearden, thanks so much.
Thank you very much, Melissa. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
James Mearden's book is called A Rhyming History of Britain, 55 BC to AD 1966.